The following podcast is edited from the live Voices of Montana program, Montana's original statewide radio talk show that's heard Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. The show has been airing for more than 20 years, and it wouldn't be possible without our local radio affiliates. Contact your local radio station if you'd like to hear the program live in your area, and it's currently not available. The show is also streamed live on voicesofmontana.com. Hey, small businesses, how you doing? How you doing? No, seriously, 99% of Montana's businesses are classified as small businesses. That's 99%. That's a lot. And there are some who have said that 20% of you are not going to survive this pandemic. I hope and pray that that's not true. I hope this holiday season proves them wrong. We're going to check in today, talk with Brent Donnelly, Montana's District Director for the Small Business Administration, who's in the middle of a Peaks to Plains tour. We'll talk about here in more detail today on Voices.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio. From Montana, for Montana, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Call in today at 866-627-5483 or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. Now, roasting chestnuts on an open fire, it's Tom Schultz.
Love that. Yeah, we do have this little Christmas snow a little bit early here, but winter's going to set in. It's just going to set in. Oh, I see where you got that, Josh. Thank you. It's Roast Chestnuts Day. Yeah, lovely.
You
got
to love it.
Yeah. And Merry Christmas to you all. Thank you for being here again. I hope the weekend was good to you. And I know it's a Monday. Can't trust that day. But with what it is, we're going to make the best of it. In fact, we're just going to go ahead and kick some hiney and get it going. Brent Donnelly is going to join us here in just a little bit. Peaks to Plains Business Resiliency Tour. He may be calling us several times because he is actually in the middle of this business tour, and it has been packed, jam-packed. Did I count 56 counties where he's going to visit and check in with small businesses? Yes. Yeah. Man, that's a lot. That's quite a schedule, and we're going to get an update on Montana's small businesses. A bit later on, too, we'll have time for open phones to kind of go through some of the things that happened over the week. And of course, the Texas lawsuit was another one the Supreme Court late on Friday said it wasn't going to hear. We'll have discussions on that. We'll also talk about a case out of Michigan that actually investigated some of these Dominion machines and pass that along. And then, of course, we're going to pay a little homage to Charlie Pride, really a country music legend, a lot of ties to Montana, who passed away at the 86. But let's catch him while we can. Montana's district director for the U.S. Small Business Administration, Brent Donnelly, is hitting the road. And man, we're talking about really hitting the road. Last week it was in Lewis and Clark County, Missoula County, Lake, Flathead, Lincoln, Sanders, and the list goes on here. Brent, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing great. We had to turn around to get cell phone service.
Oh, no.
I'm so glad to be on here and having a chance to talk to you this morning, Tom.
Yeah, thank you for being here, because there's a lot of questions that we have. And, of course, I think a lot of us think about small business this time of year, and I know that some Christmas budgets can be real tight, so we're looking for, bargains for our money as well. But I think a lot of people just get out there and want to support our small Montana businesses. Let's start first by talking about what this Peaks to Plains Business Resiliency Tour is all about.
Yeah, you're dead on with your comments, and we'll get more to that later. But, you know, I think, Tom, it's not a secret that COVID came on quick for a lot of our small businesses. And early on, a lot of them got hit. They had certain restrictions. And, you know, initially it was anticipated this would be fairly short. And here we are 9 months later, and we're still working on it. And even though the SBA, and we've talked about this before, had the PPP and the EIDL program and those things that we helped administer for Montana business, one of the things that we noticed was the true grit and resolve and tenacity that our small businesses had as they responded to COVID. It was tremendous, and it was impressive. And so, you know, what this tour is all about is a few different things, but one is to say thank you, small businesses, and keep up the good work. Another is to highlight some of the things our small businesses have done to respond to the challenges of COVID. And then finally, and perhaps most importantly, to get back to your earlier comments, just to urge Montanans to recognize that to understand that our small businesses are ready for them. And as they kind of round out their holiday shopping season and cross the finish line, they consider shopping local, eating local, if they're going to buy goods and services, to try to do it in their hometown or as close as they can to their hometown.
Are you going to make the 935 today, Wheatland County?
I'm going to make it to Wheatland County, but not at 9:35.
All right. Yeah, thank you for being here. This schedule is packed. I mean, for you, this has got to be, there's a lot of stops, but it's got to be great to get out there and go from county to county and town to town and talk to small businesses.
It's been tremendous. We did our first 2 days last week. We had 15 counties in western Montana last week. The days were long. We started the first day at 4:30 in the morning, and we ended with our last business about 9:15 at night. But wouldn't trade it for the world. We've heard so many great stories from small businesses about some of the things that they've done to respond to COVID. And what's really struck me the most is how small businesses have described how their local communities have stepped out and recognized that they needed support and were there for them. We've had tears, actually, as some businesses have described some of the things that the communities have done for them.
Yeah, I know. And our hearts go out, and it's a difficult time. Talk about, now we had you on, and I was real proud of you guys when the PPP program came out. You know, it was like 10 days later, 11 days later, and the SBA was distributing that money. And I think it was real, real key at that time to operate real fast. Now, we kind of talked about in that kind of circumstance, there may be some things that spill over, or there might be a hole here or there. Did a lot of the businesses that you were talking to take advantage of that program?
Yeah, the businesses we've talked to, almost all of them have taken advantage of the PPP and or the EIDL program, which is no surprise. I mean, almost one in five small businesses in Montana took advantage of that program when all the dust settled. There were about 24,000 PPP loans. And so, that was a tremendous boost to small business. But what those businesses are kind of telling us about that is the PPP, because COVID came on so fast, they didn't have time to plan for it, that the PPP was the thing that they, number one, took care of their employees. And that was super important for our small business owners in Montana. That was one of their paramount concerns, was their employees.
Wow.
So that allowed them to take care of their employees. But it also gave them a chance to take a deep breath and say, okay, now what are we going to do going forward? And so businesses have done things like, they've, of course, made all their physical modifications to their locations, right, with signs and removing tables at restaurants and putting stickers on the floor, all those things that we see when we're out and about. But a lot of them also did operational changes and delivery changes where they've boosted their online presence so their customers can go to their websites and order things. They do curbside delivery, local deliveries. We've heard a lot about local deliveries, where consumers in a community, maybe for whatever reason, didn't want to come, physically walk in the door of a business. They'll call them up, tell a business owner what they need, and business owner is willing to deliver.
Brent Donnelly is with us. He's the SBA District Director for the state of Montana. That's the U.S. Small Business Administration. In the middle of this Peaks to Plains Business Resiliency Tour, 56 counties as you took off December 10th. December 18th is when that'll wrap up today in Broadwater, Mar, heading to Wheatland right now. I think I got him pulled over on the side of the road so we can get a cell coverage here. Would you talk a little bit about what they said today in Broadwater County at the V42 Fitness Center, what they said in Mar County, the Twin Sisters Trading Company? And we've had the folks from Cream of the West on the program last year about this time, as a matter of fact. Good crew. They got a good thing going on there.
Yeah. So Broadwater County at V42 Fitness, that was actually their second location, which they opened up during COVID. They've got a location in Three Forks also. So they opened up during COVID. They spaced and laid out their facility in accordance with their COVID requirements. But what she shared, and this is one of my stories of tears, what we started out with tears this morning, which were really a blessing to hear. Early on when gyms had to shut down, they made the decision to stop their subscription payments, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. As gyms do on their monthly payments. And she had customers that called her up and emailed her and said, no, You're not going to cancel my subscription. We want you to be there at the end of this. Continue on.
Thank you, Montana.
So that was, thank you, Montana. So similar to that in Marr County at Twin Sisters Trading. I mean, at first, she literally put a table in front of her door and met customers at the door, asked them what they wanted, ran around her store, picked it up, helped shop for them, and then took it out to them. So she spent about a couple of months doing that. And then as she was able to kind of open back up a little bit more, she shared with me that they had customers from the community come in and say, I need a box of this and a box of that, just because. And so it was a real, her community there was a real blessing on that business, as well as they worked through COVID.
A lot of, well, you know, the old saying, you know, if your life is giving you lemons, you make lemonade. There's a lot of folks that are making those adjustments, as you say, and then realizing this new business model moving forward. What are the maybe the pros and cons as they discuss that?
Yeah, interesting. So a couple of our other visits, too, you know, businesses that, they did take a hit with as a result of COVID, and business owners said, okay, we need to go out and find some new customers. We need to find some new business, right? So a food and beverage operation shared with us that they found some new large customers that they deliver lunches to. And the anticipation is now as COVID recovery occurs and we pull out of that, they might still have those customers going forward and actually have a business that's grown. We had another business, too, over in Missoula that shared. So she did virtual shopping where she would get her her phone, take a customer virtually through her store, right?
Yeah.
And then deliver those packages. And so what that's turned into her is not only local business, but some out-of-state business also, where she's now shipping her products from her store to multiple states in the United States. And that's continuing to grow. So so not only will they have local business, but now we've got businesses that have sort of expanded their footprint outside of Montana to make sales, right? They don't need to make sales to stay open and serve their customers and communities. And so they're able to do that and actually hopefully at long term grow their business as a result.
What do they tell you about what they might expect in 2021?
2021 is still an unknown.
Yeah.
I think that there's some optimism. I think we're seeing some optimism, although I think that there's still a sense that we're not out of the woods yet with some of these businesses. Some of them have pulled through the summer, and they're still hanging on. And so, you know, especially with like some of our retail businesses, a lot of times the bulk of their sales, maybe even up to half in some cases in kind of the November to December timeline. So this is a really critical time for some of those businesses, at this juncture. And another thing, I mean, a point that was really driven home to me personally, as I was shopping local here about a week ago in my hometown, is we went into a gift shop with the mindset that we were going to do some of our Christmas shop, holiday shopping in that hometown. So we ended up walking out the door with a clay planter box, a planter, flower planter. And as we're walking out the door, the business owner, which, by the way, is my neighbor, is the owner of this business, said, oh, Terry made that. And Terry is someone in town that runs a little pottery operation out of her house that my kids took pottery lessons for here a couple of months ago. And I thought, you know what? When they talk about when you spend a dollar locally, upwards of maybe 70% of that stays in the local community. What a perfect example of that and a way to impact our local economy. I think we need to continue to remind all of us, including myself, just how important we are as consumers and how what type of influence we have on our local economy.
Brent, I want to ask another question or two, and I know that you're on a schedule and kind of got to keep rolling, and we're trying to make sure we got some cell coverage. Can you hang on just for a little bit on the other side of this break, and we'll talk about this Christmas holiday more specifically?
Absolutely.
All right, Brent Donnelly with the SBA, back with more Voices in a bit. Getting your day started early, what if you had to be at V42 Fitness at 7 a.m., in Marr County at 8 o'clock, 9:30, you're going to meet with the folks, the good fine folks at Cream of the West. It's a very business
busy business schedule. Peaks to Plains Business Resiliency Tour going on with the Montana Small Business Administration. District Director for our state is Brent Donnelly with us. Brent, I appreciate you being here. I appreciate what you're doing here and really touching base. I'm sure the Montana small businesses also really appreciate the opportunity to share their experiences with you. What you've talked a bit about some of the feedback, but when you go into these businesses, what is it you're trying to accomplish?
Yeah, so basically what we're trying to accomplish is an awareness of some of the wonderful things in the creative adaptability. Adaptability of some of these businesses. And so we're talking to them, we're asking them, hey, what have you done to respond to the challenges of COVID, number one? We've talked about a few of those things already. Online sales, curbside delivery, modifications to the physical interiors of some of the retail type locations, online shopping, virtual shopping, personal appointments. I mean, the list is long. So we're asking about that, and then we're also asking them about why it's important for them, for their local community to support local small business. What's their perspective on that? And that's where, you know, I shared a couple of stories where we had tears come out because of the outpouring of support from the local community. And so even though that's what we're trying to raise awareness of in this tour, it has been remarkable and so much fun just to hear time and time and time and stop again. We're on 17 stops now, and almost every single one, business owners have shared that their community already has been supporting them and has been since day one and continues to support them, which is, as you say, thank you, Montana.
Yeah. Have you heard from that business owner who said, you know, Brent, I'm really at my wit's end here. I don't know what I'm going to do next year.
There definitely, we've heard of some businesses that have continued to struggle for sure. And there are plenty of reports out there. And I know we've even heard reports over the last few months of some businesses closing.
Yeah, is that, not to interrupt, is that 20%, that number that gets bantered about, 20% of small businesses are going to fail. Is that accurate in your mind?
I hope not. I certainly hope not. And I mean, if the type of grit and resolve that we've seen in Montana amongst the small businesses and the community support continues to ring true, which I have no reason to believe it won't, I hope that that's far from the truth here in Montana. I mean, the way that businesses have responded and our banks have responded through the PPP program, it's really been incredible. And I think that this state, the inner workings of this, of the stakeholders, the consumers, the banking industry in the state have really come together for Montana. And so that's really exciting. But that does not change the fact that we still have COVID, right? We're still in this pandemic and there's still concerns. And so even though, you know, we've seen a tremendous amount of businesses that have become what I would describe as ready for Montana, ready to stay open, ready to keep their customers safe, ready to keep their employees safe and stay open and do business, it's still tough for some businesses. And, you know, I don't know what the future is going to hold in 2021. I think Montana businesses are going to be ready. I think our staff at the SBA, I'm super proud of them as they dealt with PPP and EIDL up to now. And so if there's something else that comes down through the pike, we'll be standing ready to deliver that to Montana businesses and help them in any way we possibly can.
What can we do to help them? I know you talk about shopping locally. I suppose that's probably what they need from us, huh?
Yeah, I think that they need, you know, businesses need to make sales to generate the revenues to stay viable. So they need to sell their goods and services. And I think that as Montanans, if we have a need to purchase anything, and you know, we talk about holiday shopping, that's the low-hanging fruit right now because it's the middle of December. But all throughout the year, we purchase goods and services of all different kinds. And I think Montanans, if they just continue to consider buying those local whenever they can, that would be a tremendous help for small business.
Has it been a good holiday season so far for them?
Yeah, that's a great question, and we've actually got some really, really good feedback on that question. In fact, we've had a few businesses tell us that it's looking like it might be one of their better holiday shopping season.
Yeah, good to hear that. Mm-hmm. When you launched this thing, the skies were blue and the roads were clear.
They were. We ran into a little snow this morning, but we've got a dry road that we're sitting next to right now, so I'm optimistic that's going to hold true for the rest of the week. And we've checked off, Andy just told me, 1,175 miles in 17 counties so far.
Well, thank you for doing that. And, you know, and when you do talk to those businesses, tell them that, well, like you have, Montanans are supporting them, and we care because I know they care about our communities. So they're making a difference. And keep hanging on. Keep hanging in there, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the message. Hey, that's like I said at the beginning. The whole thing is about telling our businesses, keep up the good work. You've done a great job, number one. Number two, thank you for doing all these things that you've done to respond to COVID so you can stay open for our Montana consumers. And number three, or just urge Montanans to, as we talked about so much, shop local, eat local, you know, feast local, buy your products and services local. Because it matters. It really makes a difference. It makes a difference to your small business, the owners of the small business, their families, their employees, and their employees' families, and the whole community. So thank you so much, Tom, for having us on this morning.
You know, and it just strikes me, too, I wanted to ask this question, because there's this thought that there's going to be a lot more people coming into Montana because of this pandemic, seeking what we love about this place and why, you know, we stay here despite maybe some of the lowest wages in the nation. Are businesses anticipating that? Have they seen any kind of that influx?
Yeah, I think they have. In fact, we've had, I mean, anecdotally, just even on this tour, we've had some businesses, including Eureka, up in Eureka, say, oh, our housing market, we have so many people moving here from all over the country, housing market short. So that's kind of interesting. We had another business, I wish I could quote the numbers because I don't remember, but they had quite an uptick in sales from new customers, that of folks that weren't in the community previously, but are now buying from them. So I think that's an interesting dynamic, and that does play into, you know, the success of our Montana small businesses. It also, you know, plays into perhaps their employee pool or potential employee pool,
right?
Which is another topic altogether. But our businesses here are a lot of them are doing well, and they need well qualified, good employees.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. We're going to catch up in the new year, too, okay? I want to see what your legislative agenda is going to be, and we'll check in. I know, thank you for the time that you've spent here today, because I know you're traveling, and so give them our best, and thank you, Brent.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for helping us spread the word, and have a great day for you and your listeners.
Yeah, thanks. Brent Donnelly, who's the Montana District Director for the U.S. Small Business Administration. Hey, look, Billings wants to welcome you. Our neighbors from Libby to Sydney, Sheridan to Cheyenne, visit Billings to explore or do business. See their safety guidelines at visitbillings.com/COVID-19. Visit Billings. We are open for you. Here's Brian Bennett with headlines.
The U.S. Supreme Court will not hear Texas' case requesting four swing states that win for former Vice President Joe Biden should be prevented from casting their electoral votes. Montana Governor Steve Bullock had asked the court to dismiss the lawsuit after Governor-elect Greg Gianforte encouraged the justices to hear the case. The Electoral College is set to meet and vote today. The Federal Communications Commission has approved the designation of 988 as the new nationwide three-digit abbreviated code for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. Those of the 988 prefects in Montana to complete a local call must move to a mandatory 10-digit dialing for local calls by next October 24th. The first COVID-19 vaccine has been approved by the Food and Drug Administration for emergency use in Montana and elsewhere else in the country. It is set to arrive simultaneously everywhere by 10:30 this morning, and Montana expects it for 10 major hospitals initially. With Montana News headlines, I'm Brian Bennett.
Ladies and gentlemen, the late, great Charlie Pride.
Whenever I chance to meet some old friends on the street, they wonder how does a man get to be this way. I've always got a smiling face, anytime and any place, and And every time they ask me why, I just smile and say, you've got to kiss an angel good morning.
You're singing, aren't you? You're singing along. I know, that one goes way back. And folks who might remember, Charlie Pride passed away. Welcome back to Voices of Montana. Another breakup coming here. We'll talk a little bit more about the country singer, the music legend, really, and former athlete. Was 86 years old. Had quite a time of it in his life. He spent about, was it 10 years in Montana? It was actually quite a significant time. He played baseball for the Missoula Timberjacks and the East Helena Smelterites. That was in the 60s, and this was before becoming one of, and he doesn't really like the moniker, you know, the first black member of the Country Music Hall of Fame, but that is what it is. You know, he went through the 60s and the 70s, and we were in very much a lot of turmoil, a lot of change in our country. I think change for the good when it came to understand, you know, that race doesn't matter. And Charlie Pride led that way, whether it was on his chest or not. He was certainly a leader in that regard. And so we'll talk a little bit more about Charlie Pride. And as we come on back to, I'm going to catch you up to date as the Supreme Court did not hear the Texas lawsuit. So that and more ahead here from Montana for Montana. It's Voices of Montana.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 1-866-627-5483 and join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana, with Tom Schultz.
Montana Attorney General Tim Fox is going to join us tomorrow. Got him for the whole hour. He's going to wrap up, if he can, as much as he can, 8 years as Montana's Attorney General. There's a number of things that we'll look back upon, but most recently, you know, he's been on the program. We do check in about every month, and our next Attorney General, Austin Knutson, committed to doing the same thing as well, and I so much appreciate that. There's a lot that comes out of the Attorney General's office, I can't even think back about what was going on 8 years ago. I mean, I can hardly remember, you know, last week for that matter. Welcome back. Voices of Montana. Tom Schultz alongside. Maybe my memory's a little bit better than that, but it fails me when I need it most. You know how that goes. So Tim Fox on the program tomorrow. And then just dropped. There's something I'm working on that I really don't want to get into until I can fully kind of vet it. But there was this, I don't know, have you seen the Netflix documentary Social Dilemma? I haven't either. I'm pledging to watch that. I'll have to pay a little money for it, but I guess I'm okay with that. But just listening to that trailer tells me that I need to listen to this and examine this. And I'm looking for Montana connected experts in the field, and I've got a couple lined up, but I haven't quite necessarily gotten through that. Do you want to? Have you got a little bit of that up there, Josh? This is the trailer, okay? And I just saw this, and I have all these same questions when it comes to where we're at today in social media. And so this is something that I am working on. I don't have anything here at the moment, but let's go ahead and
climate change. When you go to Google and type in climate change is, you're going to see different results depending on where you live.
Changing our economy.
Things that Google knows about your interests.
That's not by accident. That's a design technique. What I want people to know is that everything they're doing online is being watched, is being tracked. Every single action you take is carefully monitored and recorded.
Every single action.
A lot of people think Google's just a search box and Facebook's just a place to see what my friends are doing. What they don't realize is there's entire teams of engineers whose job is to use your psychology against you.
I was the co-inventor of the Facebook-like button.
I was the president of Pinterest.
Google. Twitter. Instagram.
There were meaningful changes happening around the world because of these platforms. I think we were naive about the flip side of that coin.
Thank you. Yes.
We get rewarded by hearts, likes, thumbs up, and we conflate that with value and we conflate it with truth.
A whole generation is more anxious, more depressed.
I always felt like fundamentally it was a force for good. I don't know if I feel that way anymore.
That's part of it right there that got me you know, what has social media become? And I think everybody has an opinion on that. And you could share that right now because we do have some time. I want to catch up on what happened over the weekend. It was late Friday, 6:30, when the Supreme Court released their decision regarding the Texas lawsuit. There's something that's coming out of Michigan today, whether it's significant or not, I guess is yet to be determined here. But that is something that we're going to look at down the road a little bit, the effects of social media. And so I've been kind of actually in contact with some folks, and then it's scheduling is not the funnest thing in the world. Sometimes it comes together like that. Sometimes it takes a little while to do that. I forget who it was I was talking to. Maybe it was a Glenn in Great Falls, or somebody had texted. I am also looking at for local experts in the 1619 project too, and if I have to, I'll go to that national level too. But we are from Montana for Montana, so we try to keep it at that level. So that's one thing that I'm working on here. Let me get to today's. I guess the big news is the fact that this Texas lawsuit was, as maybe expected, thrown out by the justices. Numerous lower courts have heard these allegations before in the 5 weeks since this November 3rd election, and they have pretty much uniformly ruled. And the track record's not real good on this, and I know it's going to take a little bit of courage, and I am one who's all about looking into this to make sure that our elections down the road can benefit from a clean scrubbing and produce our election results that we can have confidence in. Whether President Trump is successful here in any of these lawsuits, the Kraken doesn't seem to have been the big Kraken that came out of the water, baby Kraken. Maybe it wasn't even a Kraken whatsoever. But Sidney Powell's going to continue to move on here. But the Supreme Court justices, the Texas lawsuit was basically the state of Texas suing Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And just to summarize here in my own words, claiming that since we believe your elections were done illegally or unconstitutionally, want to declare your election system invalid, and pretty much throwing out their elections. And the Supreme Court, rightly so, I think, said you don't really have that kind of standing right at the Supreme Court level. And maybe that's not a real good summary of it, but nonetheless, the Supreme Court's not going to hear the Texas lawsuit. I don't know if that was the last bit that President Trump, and he'll continue this, and he has pledged to continue the fight here, and I appreciate that. And he may be setting something up for 2024. I don't know. Would you like to see Trump back in 2024? I guess I have mixed thoughts about that. Well, I bet Mike Pence has a lot of mixed thoughts about that as well. But we'll play this out, and we're going to continue talking about election integrity. Had Logan Churchwell on the program on Friday. He's from the Public Interest Legal Foundation. They do a lot of good work when it comes to voter integrity and election integrity. And if you want to go, it's publicinterestlegal, I think, .org. For more information there. Logan had talked about that timeline really is not going to allow the president to move completely forward with challenges. Now, he's done an awful lot of these challenges in a lot of certain courts here, but it hasn't been real successful. The one that, and honestly, I'm surprised at this. There's people from the right side, so to speak, like the Washington Examiner. They, too, feel like this was the right decision. Kaylee McGee White, who is a political writer for that organization, says the Supreme Court upheld two important principles, federalism and the separation of powers. The National Review, that's going to be a right-leaning publication. The editors say there that there's a proper but limited role for the federal courts in election cases. They can rein in violations of federal law based on evidence that the violation was large enough to affect the outcome. There's another publication here. This was Andrew McCarthy. You probably know him from Fox News. Talked about didn't really like all those Republican House members who had lined up in favor of this Texas lawsuit, and talked about that if successful, it would have invited blue states through lawsuits to dictate how red states can govern themselves. And that's the key thing here about these sorts of decisions. It's not a limited deal. There are lasting consequences to that. Another one here, this comes from the Wall Street Journal, which is typically leaning right, that publication. This is one more example in which the claims that Mr. Trump would somehow hijack American democracy have been proven false. The president huffs and tweets, but he never blows the country's core institutions down. The checks and balances have held. I think the president is well aware of the historic implications here. And then it goes on to say, there's a time, and that was my editorializing there, there's a time to fight and a time to concede. Mr. Trump has had his innumerable days in court and lost. He would do far better now to tout his accomplishments in office, which are many, and accept his not-so-horrible fate as one of 45 former American presidents. That's the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. So a lot of folks in the right have accepted this Texas ruling, and as you heard there from the Wall Street Journal, they're starting to become a part of this move-on crowd. I get we're going to have to eventually move on at some point. But like I say, this is real important. So I want to see a complete scrubbing as much as we can. If these lawsuits are the vehicle for that, then I'm all for keeping them going. There are a lot of people on the left, like folks from the Washington Post, who are going to celebrate this. Rosalind Helderman had written, as of Friday, more than 50 of their cases had failed or been tossed out of court. Just one minor suit would shorten the period of time in which Pennsylvania voters could fix errors on certain ballots was successful. Judges consistently found there was no substantive evidence to support claims. And then, you know, that kind of what bothers me a little bit. If there are these kinds of suspicions, and the last report I heard was 1,000 of these, well, Carol would like me to say testifony, but 1,000 of these testimonies and these affidavits that allude to, some are just maybe very explainable irregularities. Others are not so. And as I said on Thursday in our open phones, I had appreciated what Ann Coulter had talked about. We know they cheat. We're going to have to win anyway. We're up to a break here. Casey, stand by, okay? You've got some comments on Texas. I know you're following this real close. So we'll take a short break and come on back as we'll look at the news of the day here. It was actually late Friday when that decision came down. Electoral College is meeting today as we speak. As a matter of fact, they're going to cast their votes for president. They won't necessarily be officially accounted until January 6th in Congress. At 866-627-5483. I give that out. Just a little bit of time. Casey in Great Falls, you're on the air listening on KQDI 1450 AM. Thanks for following this issue. What do you think about this Texas case?
I think the Texas case was actually appropriate, but it doesn't matter what I think or the people that voted for Trump's think. It's the establishment. Case was trying to say was that they were contaminating and tainting the entire electoral process, not just in their states, but it set a precedent for the other states to do the type of corruption. And believe you me, I watched this stuff for hours, and it's just rife with corruption, and it's systemic. And there is a conspiratorial element, a very strong element in the establishment to get rid of Trump. He's like the when you go to a picnic and there's a skunk there, everybody agrees to get rid of the skunk. He's the skunk. And including the three people he appointed, they basically chose sides as soon as they took the oath that they were going to follow the establishment. And I mean that. And the reason I say that is because the Constitution actually was written for such – the Electoral College was exactly – this is – if there isn't, if it's not to be used, this is the best case for using it that we've had in our history. The record will show, I think, in the long term, even in the short term, as far as I'm concerned, that the corruption was exactly orchestrated and very deep level. And have you ever went to a hearing where it's predetermined before you have the hearing? I've been involved in some of these matters. Like I went to a mediation one time a couple years ago. It was actually determined by other parties that the outcome before you even, I watched two to give truth to this point. I watched the Nevada court proceedings and the ones in Wisconsin. The judge took the hearing, but it wasn't really a fair hearing. It was biased. And within 1 minute of the end of the hearing, he didn't go into deliberation. He said, this is my judgment, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a pro forma. Yeah, yeah, we have a meeting. We're just, and the press is going along with it. Everybody's fawning over. And look at they're turning on Biden before he's even sworn in. So the fix is in on getting rid of Biden and putting Kamala in there.
Well, I can't understand why the courts, Casey, are not, and appreciate you that you watched those hearings. I watched a little bit of the Nevada hearing as much as time would allow, and I get that too. You can tell that some of these justices are predisposed. I think it's like Trump said, they don't necessarily have the courage to be the one who says, yep, the buck is going to stop here. I get that. I mean, it's a real serious thing here. There's a case out of Michigan that today we'll find out. They actually did audit some of these machines, an independent organization. So, and a judge ruled this morning that that information can be released today. This was actually they tried this case and made statements on it prior to the weekend. But early this morning, a judge in Michigan gave the lawyers the permission to release the results of that forensic imaging examination of some of these voting machines. So I'm very curious to look into that. I appreciate, again, Casey, that you're following this. I know it's very emotional. And I don't know if anybody's got any real answers as to is there enough evidence to overturn this election? But I've said it maybe too often, but I'm going to continue following this, is that what we get out of this is a good scrubbing of our election system, I think that's a win. And that's going to serve us going down the road. It's ironic, this text message here, that Texas thinks that they should be able to tell other states that they didn't run their election the right way, when Texas thought the most efficient way to run their own election was to allow only one drop-off ballot box per county. Thanks for that message. There's more here. Out of time. Tomorrow, it's Attorney General Tim Fox. I always appreciate you listening and your comments. Studio at voicesofmontana.com.
You've been listening to Voices of Montana. Comments and opinions heard are those of the host or callers, and not necessarily those of this station, sponsors, or Northern News Network. Join us Monday through Friday at 9:06 for Voices of Montana.